Welcome back to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner, and congratulations, everybody. We made it. The year is 2025. Today is January 8th, and this is the beginning of a new season, Season 3, Episode 1 of the podcast, and we're going to kick off the new year with a Jerry Garcia Band show from December 21st, 1979. A couple weeks ago, I was planning on doing this particular show. It was the 45th anniversary. It's an 8-song show, and it's a tremendous show, even though it's only 8 songs long. And for me, this show and this period represents the dawn of a new age for the Jerry Garcia Band, a golden age where they kind of came into their prime. I see the best years for the Garcia Band from about 79 to 84. It's all subjective, of course, but I think they really nailed it and kind of found their groove during those years. Also on the show, we're going to bring back Album of the Week since we're only looking at an 8-song show. It's always enjoyable to talk about some other music that I'm listening to besides the Grateful Dead. And today's album of the week is going to be Countdown to Ecstasy from Steely Dan. And we'll get to that right after audio highlights and discussion of the Keystone Palo Alto show, Jerry Garcia Band, December 21st, 79. So the reason I look at this is the dawn of like a new age for the Jerry Garcia Band. And one of the golden age, maybe perhaps the best years of the band. You start off with the 72, 73 shows with Merle Saunders and some of the best shows you'll ever hear. Keystone Berkeley, the great album they came out with, Live at Keystone. Obviously, choice stuff there. But in 72, 73, they really weren't touring regularly. They hadn't established, you know, what the Jerry Electric Band act's going to be. Then they kind of went into a period of Legion of Mary from 74, 75. And there's a lot of good material from that era. And, of course, Jerry's playing is great. Merle Saunders is all con. John Conn, obviously great. The only thing that really didn't kind of click for me during those years was the horns. I love jazz. If Miles Davis were playing or Branford Marsalis, I mean, obviously Branford was too young at that point, 73, 74, he's probably a little boy. But if you're going to introduce horn players to the Jerry Garcia Band, they better be top-notch, one of the best in the world. Otherwise, I think it got a little too drawn out. You know, when I listen to that stuff, I'm waiting for Jerry to come back. You know, you got to a Merle solo, Jerry solo, you got the horns, and you're waiting for Jerry to come back. It's like a little too diluted, even though, like I said, there's tons of great stuff from that era. And also, they hadn't settled in on the songs that work. For instance, you know, they would do like Stevie Wonder, Creeping, and Boogie On, Reggae Woman. And I love, man, I'm a huge Stevie Wonder guy. I love that album, Fulfilling This First Finale. But they weren't great versions, you know, so it was a lot of experimentation going on back in those days, trying to find the right songs. If they didn't find the right song, that was okay, because Jerry's out on his own experimenting from the Grateful Dead. One song that really worked back in those days, I think, they didn't do it a lot, was Ain't No Woman Like the One I Got. And there's an official release from August 11th, 74, a brilliant version of that song by the Four Tops. So they definitely got some magic in there. And like I said, lots of great shows. Then you get the Keith and Donna in the band in 76 through 78. Once again, March 78, excellent Jerry Garcia Band. Maria Muldaur is joining Donna Jean on the background vocals. And I think that period when they came out with Cats on the Stars, that's a very hot time period for the Jerry Garcia Band. But then they went into Reconstruction, which was a more experimental, probably the most experimental project. Garcia had the thing with Howard Wales back in the day, but As far as when the Garcia band really kicked in, Reconstruction was the most experimental thing they did. And it just reached the point where Jerry, at the end of 1979, is like, we're going to do the Jerry Garcia band. He picked the right songs, the right players, and everything just kind of fell into line. And that's what we have here at the Keystone Show, just 8 songs, but the perfect Jerry Garcia band songs, the one that captures his essence, and, you know, he's totally happy playing. So 1979, the band we're looking at, it's a quartet. We got John Kahn on bass, the great John Kahn, always there. And Ozzy Allers on synthesizer. I happen to really appreciate his playing, even though the organ and the Hammond B3 sound of Melvin would definitely complement Garcia band better. But we got Johnny DeFoncesa on drums. Tragically, he died in 1980. I believe it was a car accident. But yeah, he was there for the first couple tours, and really the launching of a great period here for the Garcia band. So at the end of 79, they played 12 shows, this particular quartet, and they were all at the Keystone, 8 in Berkeley and 4 in Palo Alto, and the one we're going to look at is in Palo Alto. And so the first show of this little, I guess you would, I don't know if you call it a tour, but 12 dates, started on October 7th. And then after they did this little run, they went out to the East Coast and just killed it. You know, I think, well, there's a couple of West Coast shows still, but in February of 1980, one of the best Jerry Garcia band months ever. So 12/21/79, the show starts with Sugar Ree. And this is a monster, Sugar Ree, to start off, man. Jerry was in the mood, showing off on right from the get-go in the Keystone, man. What a great place, little place that must have been to see the Jerry Garcia band. What a treat for the people who were there. So this is a hot time period for Sugar Ree, because 8 days later, the Grateful Dead played, I believe it's December 28, 79. They did a great Sugar Ree to open in Oakland. And this is right there. They're both two of the best Sugar Rees you'll ever hear. So the first solo, really nice. And the second and third instrumentals are brilliant. So I had to decide for an audio highlight which one to play. I flipped the coin, and we're going to listen to the second instrumental. Ozzy plays a little solo, hands it off to Jerry, and Jerry hits the gap, man. Enjoy. We'll be right back. Hey, that was the second instrumental of Sugar Ree. The Lucky Deadheads had to be mostly Deadheads in there in the Keystone on December 21st, 79. Caught another great instrumental. Garcia goes off on the third jam as well. So you can't ask for a better start. 17 plus minute Sugar Ree. On the heels of Sugar Ree, we got They Love Each Other. Again, two classic Garcia Hunter songs here. And there was just something about the way Jerry Garcia Band played Love Each Other. I think the best versions are like the from 1983, where Garcia took the solo a couple rounds, and you got Melvin with his incredible funky playing. But you still even hear that on this version, where you got the bare bones Garcia Band. Ozzy Allers does a nice keyboard riff before Garcia goes off on his instrumental here. You know, obviously not quite what a 1983 version would be, not as full and plush sounding as that, but still a great Love Each Other. And there was just, for some reason, maybe it's the way Khan's playing bass. I can't quite put my finger on it, but these Love Each Others that the Garcia Band did just were more exciting than the ones the Grateful Dead did, unless you go back to 1973 and you get hear those original Love Each Others from 73 by the Grateful Dead. Those were pretty awesome. But you know, it became a song that Jerry definitely adored, man. He played it so much. But it was always a little better with the Jerry Garcia Band. Third song, we're going to move into the Great American Songbook with A Russian Lullaby, a number by the great Irving Berlin. And Jerry did this on his, I believe it was the second Garcia effort, studio album, which became known as Compliments. And just like a nice, Garcia took this song and just made it into a slow motion ballad, just savoring, this great little tune, as Irving Berlin would say. Time for Khan to go off and Jerry to take a nice leisurely solo and just really put the song under the microscope. And, you know, definitely one of the songs that would become, for at least for a short time, a staple with the Garcia Band. He would do it with David Grisman, you know, in the later years. But a song most of us Deadheads, grew to love, man. Russian Lullaby, a plain and simple tune. And as I was listening again to this, I listened to, you know, this show a few times. I listened to it again this morning, driving around, and I was kind of blown away by the last solo. I should have took an audio highlight of that, because the last solo of this Russian Lullaby is incredible. But definitely, if you listen to this show, keep an ear open for the Russian Lullaby and that last solo by Jerry. Just a classic, awesome Garcia. And the fourth song, which will bring an end to the first set. And yeah, this show, we're still looking at it, even though it's only 8 songs, we're looking at a 2-hour show. So Jerry's averaging 15 minutes a song plus, you know, on this night. Last song, huge number, After Midnight. You know, J.J. Cale, you think of Eric Clapton. And I like the way Jerry sings After Midnight, but I think if the Grateful Dead did this, Bob Weir would sing it. I don't know. Jerry's such a great singer on all these other songs. I think he does. He shines like a new light on it. He's almost a little subdued when he sings After Midnight, but wow, does he make up for it with the guitar work. So, this is awesome. It's I'm not looking at the time, but it's at least 15 plus minutes of After Midnight. Now, as the tour progresses and they go to the East Coast, I think the first time they did it, After Midnight, Eleanor Rigby After Midnight, was at the Stone, January 20th. And they kind of teased or played around with Rigby a little bit, but wasn't a full Eleanor Rigby. Once they hit the East Coast, it became After Midnight, Eleanor Rigby After Midnight. And that might be the ultimate Jerry Garcia Band masterpiece, man. Just killed it. Eleanor Rigby went so well in the middle, but This is prior to that. It's a standalone After Midnight. And man, Garcia cooks on this. So instead of rambling on about this, I'm going to play a nice long chunk of this After Midnight, since it's such a rare tune. Dig.
Thank you. take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes.
How awesome is that, man? And just once again, to go back in time and place, you're in Palo Alto in a little club, up close and personal with the Jerry Garcia Band on fire. And how much did tickets cost? I can't imagine that there were more than $8 to get in that night. Just an incredible value. So especially your bookending that little set with Monster Jam and Sugar Ree and what we just heard in After Midnight, man, can't beat it. So yeah, this is the dawn of a golden age for the Jerry Garcia Band. And he comes back for set two, kicks it off with How Sweet It Is. I liked his version, but the thing is, for years we've been listening to Melvin Seals and the background singers, and it's just so rich, and you know, Jerry's able to play off it so much more. So this is a bare bones version, not as intoxicating as, you know, the Melvin Seals years, but still, I was listening to it before, man, some really good guitar work from Jerry at the end. And that leads us to the song of the night, probably even better than the Sugar Ree and After Midnight, which is incredible, which is why I picked this show to talk about, just because there's three performances here that are insane. This is the best Positively Fourth Street I've ever heard. And I did a show on a podcast on Oswego from February 17th, 1980. And that definitely has one of the best, maybe second best to this one. But today I confirmed it. I listened to it again and again. And this Fourth Street is crazy, man. Garcia just goes nuts on guitar. And obviously he sings it so beautiful. And that all started in the Keystone Berkeley, the version that was released. You know, that's when I first fell in love with Garcia's version, hearing it on Live at Keystone. And if I'm correct, I believe David Grisman played some mandolin on that version. Great version, but not as long and as jammed out as these ones from 79 and going into 1980. And that's another thing I love about this show. You got After Midnight and Positively 4th Street, two songs which I never saw. You know, I've seen 52 Garcia shows. Most of them were Garcia Band, probably 46 of the 52. Never saw Positively 4th Street or After Midnight. So yeah, this was a special night to catch both those songs in the same show. And man, 4th Street, what a great song. I've read this quote before, but I got to read it again just because it's one of the most right-on quotes of getting into critiquing a Dylan song. This is David Gans interviewed Garcia, and this is what Jerry said about 4th Street. "It was the beautiful sound of Positively 4th Street that got to me more than the bitterness of the lyric. The combination of the beauty and the bitterness, to me, is wonderful. It's like a combination of something being funny and horrible. It's a great combination of two odd ingredients in the human experience." Right on, man. Just that totally describes the way Dylan played 4th Street. It's, you know, you hear the music, it's inviting, it's almost happy and upbeat. And then there's this crazy kind of angry, you know, interpretation by Dylan. You know, it could be interpreted as angry, but it's a beautiful combination. To hear Dylan vent against that, the lovely melody and the sweetness of the song Positively 4th Street. That's one of the things that totally made it work. I mean, if Dylan just came out and ranted and didn't do the song like that, it wouldn't have been as well received. You get sucked in by the beauty, then you get sucked in by the brilliance of the lyrics. Bob Dylan, man, just pulling two things from opposite directions, sticking it together, and magic, it works. But Jerry, as always, took the microscope out, found what he loved in this song. And the way Jerry sings it, he empathizes with the narrator. Jerry is heartbroken when he sings this, man. It's blues. It cuts to the core, man. Just the Jerry singing of it, and then just digging into the guitar work here. I know Dylan was a fan of it back in 73 when he heard it for live at Keystone, but Jerry took it up like another 20 steps for these 79, 80 shows. Just incredible versions of Positively 4th Street. And now I'm going to play for you maybe the best jam you will ever hear in a Positively 4th Street. Dig.
See me.
Jerry, definitely in the zone on this night. Three masterpieces, The Sugary, The After Midnight, and most positively, this positively 4th Street. What we heard was just a piece of it. This is like an 18-minute version. There's so much impressive work, and even Khan has a great little ending to one of these solos, so it's just a masterpiece. Masterpiece Theater, Keystone, December 21st, 79. It's a short second set, so after this positively 4th Street, they close out with Deal. And this is not like the 1980 Moving Forward Deals where there's a second jam at the end. It's basically the middle instrumental, Garcia, Ozzie Ollers, back to Garcia, hot, but not what the song would become as they move forward. Now the version from Oswego, which is only 2 months later, has that second solo, so they were just kind of working it in. That might be the first one, or not sure exactly when the first time they did it was. Could have been that Oswego show from February 17, 1980, but a good deal to end the set. And they come back with a long encore, The Harder They Come, channeling Jimmy Cliff. Great. This is a classic Garcia Band song from the early Keystone days moving forward. But there's nothing like when Melvin Seals, came into the band. They were doing Harder They Come during those years. That was from like 81 to 84, the golden years for Harder They Come. They would go into this little reggae shuffle in the middle and really get into the spirit of it. Bring you to Jamaica or wherever you want to go in your mind. It was incredible stuff. This bare bones version is good, but once again, listening to it after knowing what you know, when you hear Melvin and the background singers, it doesn't quite live up to that. But Garcia is jamming good, and it's definitely worth listening to. A long encore at the Keystone, Harder They Come. And hey, there you go, a great little 8-song show. And now the countdown to Ecstasy, which means we're moving into Album of the Week, Steely Dan. Yeah, so this album means a lot to me. I've listened to it a lot over the years. My favorite Steely Dan album. Now, most people, I think the consensus out there is Asia would be the greatest Steely Dan album, and that's a masterpiece, definitely. But this was Steely Dan's second album, and I think it gets underrated, even though there's undeniable classic Steely Dan FM anthems on it. And that starts, it ended up, I think it peaked at number 35 on the US charts, which is ridiculous. It should have been top 10, if not number one. I mean, it's that good of an album. And one of the things that I think held this back is the fact that there was no hit songs. There was no hit songs from this album. And Steely Dan, even though they were playing music that was cool as shit, they had hit songs in the 70s all over the place. Their first album, they had self-titled Steely Dan. What was that great song? Reelin' in the Years. And Do It Again. I don't know if that hit the charts, but a great song probably was on the charts. Also, you had Dirty Work. So the first album was outstanding, but not as complete. And I think as concept album, as an album holds together all the way through evenly, there's just something about this Countdown to Ecstasy that's magical. And it starts off with Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva, won't you take me by the hand? The shine of your Japan, the sparkle of your China. Can you show me Bodhisattva? So because of this song, which does get a lot of FM radio play, and it's been a staple in their live concert through the years, now probably 500,000 people know what a bodhisattva is, or at least they know of the word and pretty much what it is. If you look at a dictionary, a bodhisattva is a person who is able to reach nirvana, but delays so out of compassion in order to save suffering beings. That's nice, man. A bodhisattva delaying his trip to nirvana to help out others, man. I think we all need to have a bodhisattva in our lives. But hey, what a great tune, man. Just the brilliance of starting off an album with this. And the definitely right off the bat, you get everything. Steely Dan gives you blues, jazz, and it's all so neatly packed. And they unfairly get pegged as, you know, this slick studio band. There's nothing wrong with being a slick studio band if you're kicking ass, you know, and that's what Steely Dan did. There's a lot of cool blues and call response in this, you know, leading up to the big jam. They repeat Bodhisattva 8 times, the Lookout, and they just had such timing and precision. Donald Fagen and Walter Becker are geniuses, man. They, you know, obviously they're in the Hall of Fame. People know of them, but definitely one of the top songwriting teams. And I'll go as far as put it, Steely Dan is definitely in my top 10 as far as favorite bands. What they did was just so awesome. And despite all the sales they had through the years and the hit songs, I think definitely underrated. It was almost too much for audiences to grab because they were that good. Bodhisattva, this was always a very good live song to play. Their box set, I think it was called Citizen Kane. There's a live Bodhisattva, which is incredible. For years, I listened to a bootleg from the record plant, March 20th, 1974. Another great Bodhisattva. Now, they didn't extend their jams as long, but they definitely improvised. You know, made them quicker, more intense than the album versions. So if you love guitar jams, Steely Dan had it right there in the album, and it was easily accessible in their live concerts. And you know, while I'm talking about that, there's a great band out there, Steely Dead. They'll play like a Grateful Dead song, then they'll do a Steely Dan song, and on. And it's such a great concept because Steely Dan had these great jams in their songs, but they really didn't expand them much. As much as brilliant as it is within the jam, and then you take a band that's playing Grateful Dead and they could extend them a little, you wouldn't think of it to whoever came up with that idea of Steely Dead. It's brilliant because Steely Dan was very much a jam band, but contained. So you put a Grateful Dead approach to it, it's like the perfect band to jam off of. And yeah, I couldn't say it. I was so impressed by Steely Dead. Dave A. Bear is the guitarist, and he played with Melvin with the incarnation of the Jerry Garcia Band, obviously after Jerry's passing. I saw them in Memphis, just a fantastic band. I would definitely recommend going out there and seeing them. But whoever came up with that concept, right on the money, it works. Second song on Countdown to Ecstasy, Razor Boy. I think the title is pretty self-explanatory. Razor Boy comes, take your fancy things away. Song about cocaine. And Steely Dan, man, they wrote all these great songs about decadence, drugs, sex. And they did it always in such a clever way. It was never obvious. It was always just brilliant writing, man. These guys definitely do not get enough, as much credit as they get. You can't give them enough credit. Just an awesome band. And the sound of Fagen's keyboards, man, during Razor Boy and this whole album, it's like Asia, you definitely get the studio effects and a lot of, you know, a lot of studio effort put into it and different sounds. This is more like, even though this has it, the Countdown to Ecstasy has that, it's more raw. It's more almost like a live band playing. And they were able to play most of these songs pretty well in concert, as they did. If you get a chance, if there's any way you could get a hold of a 74 Steely Dan bootleg tape, or, you know, I've gotten my hands on a few. And like I said, that record plan one and made the rounds, definitely worth checking out. There was such an amazing live band. And they still were as they went forward into the 2000s. That Fagen on keyboards, Walter Becker passed away recently, unbelievable bassist, such a great songwriting team. For this album, you got Jeff Skunk Baxter and Denny Diaz on guitar. I'm not sure exactly who did more of the leads. I think it was Skunk Baxter, great guitarist, not positive. and Jim Hodder on drums. Song three, The Boston Rag. Bring back the Boston Rag. Yeah, and a cool little blues number. Another thing that they do so well on this record, a lot of their records, but especially this one, adjusting the tempo. Like they break down the Boston Rag, almost stop it, then work it back again. They bring back the Boston Rag. Just beautiful stuff. Fourth song, and the great thing about this is, I think this perfectly matches the Garcia Band show because this is eight songs too. From the fourth, fifth, and sixth song, this album just takes off, man. It just totally blasts off. One of the best 4, 5, 6 lineups of any album. And this is probably the most underrated Steely Dan song, Your Gold Teeth. Just an awesome number, Peking, and they grow tobacco in Peking. In the land of the locust, you'll see a sad thing, Cafe Bavarian Roast, etc., etc. I'm singing one of the, I think it's the bridge of the song. But this song just has so many shifts, and the keyboards are so cool. The way they layer in the guitar, the album just kind of like really, as great as it is up to this point, really kind of takes off with Your Gold Teeth. It's like they launch you into a new horizon. And excellent tune, probably one that wasn't played that much by Steely Dan, but just awesome, man. And then we get to the two big, the nucleus of this album, two of their best songs ever, Showbiz Kids, number 5. And this song gives me a good laugh because we used to listen to this record in college, and friends would gather around and we would listen, and they sing a phrase early on. Now the phrase is "lost wages." We can never make out what it was. You know, we didn't have the internet. We couldn't, you know, go and see exactly what they're saying. We thought it might be outrageous. And so it goes, "lost wages, lost wages," and it repeats itself throughout the whole song. And I heard it as "I'm not Swedish," and it sounds more like "I'm not Swedish" than anything, even though it doesn't make sense. In college, we used to just listen to this album, and when this song came on, everybody would get up and just start singing "I'm not Swedish." So yeah, it brings back great memories. But Showbiz Kids, excellent tune, great guitar work. So you got the vocal part of "Lost Wages" continually going throughout the song. Great lyrics, got the Steely Dan t-shirt for the coup de grace. They're outrageous. Poor people sleeping in the shade of the light while stars come out at night. Yeah, just once again, great songwriting, great guitar work as the song's moving along. The songs are so multi-layered, they're enjoyable, but when you really close listen to it, it's unbelievable what they did. Magic. So yeah, Showbiz Kids, definitely one of my favorites. Showbiz is kids making movies of themselves. They don't give a fuck about anybody else. Song 6, perhaps the most famous Steely Dan song, even though it didn't end up being a hit song. My Old School. And just like when you hear this, anybody, whoever went to college, man, brings you right back into that college experience. And for many years, I would hear this song after I left New Paltz and just think of My Old School, how I never went back to My Old School, never going back to My Old School. And time will tell, man, because I'm back in New Paltz and loving life up here. But for Steely Dan, it was Annandale, Bard College. That was their old school. And just another great tune. The instrumental break, Guadalajara Won't Do. And it had that perfect final guitar solo. Skunk Baxter, I think John Harrington is now the guitarist for Steely Dan. I actually had the pleasure of meeting him and hanging out with him for a little bit. Nicest guy you'll ever meet. You know, he does a great job on the, you know, usually My Old School will be an encore for Steely Dan when they play live these days or for the past 20 years. Huge song. Definitely one that gets a lot of FM radio play, perhaps more than any other Steely Dan song. So My Old School, we're up to song 6. And then the album takes like this nice little break for Pearl of the Quarter. And I just, you could probably hear me like laughing and just smiling as I think about this album. I freaking love Pearl of the Quarter, such a great song. Came along with a Cajun smile singing Voulez, Voulez, Voulez-vous. Just a song about a love, fleeting love that the singer meets down in New Orleans. And it's the one song which is like a little more laid back than the other songs, but every bit as engaging and just a perfect kind of release after those big tunes, Showbiz Kids and My Old School. And then it wraps up with King of the World, another just weird, excellent Steely Dan song. Just their lyrics, like no other band's lyrics. Not saying they're better. It's just like they got their own language. Every man left from the Rio Grande is king of the world, as far as I know. And cool keyboard, cool guitar work on this. Great way to end the album. And just, hey, this countdown to ecstasy. 8 songs, perfect, man. For me, it's the most real, the most authentic of the Steely Dan albums, even though I'm a fan of all their other stuff. But Countdown to Ecstasy rules. If you don't know it, check it out. Nice to be back talking about Album of the Week again. I'm going to try to do this a little more often. January next week, I'll be back with another show. I'm not sure where I'm going yet, but I like January and February because I'll tend to do some more unusual stuff instead of, there's not as many great anniversary shows, especially I think in January. So I'm going to do something weird next week. And in a couple weeks, I got Doug back. We're going to do Buffalo 79, November 9th. That is a killer show. I never got a chance to get to it during the month of November. One of the best shows is 79. So we got a lot of great stuff, man. Hey, everybody. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. Thanks again for listening. I appreciate all you guys. If you want to comment on the show, any suggestions, catfishgarcia82@yahoo.com is my email. And my website, tangledupintunes.com. Speak to you next week. Peace out. We'll be right back.